Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hi, I'm Abigail, and I'm addicted to money. So for the next 50 seconds, I'd like to feel dirty, inconsiderate, manipulative, and ashamed. I apparently agreed to play the game of life by the rules made by the rich in order to make them more rich. And because I feel powerless and out of control, I am asking you to listen to this ad for Anchor. If you haven't heard about Anchor, it's the easiest way to make a podcast. It's free. There are creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your computer or phone. Anchor will distribute your podcast wherever you can get podcasts. You can make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership. And everything you need to make a podcast is in one place. So download Anchor for free on the app or go to anchor.fm to get started. So, yeah, that's all I have. Thanks for letting me share.
You're listening to the Manic Pixie Weirdo, where we talk about relationships and all the different kinds of relationships that you have in your life with all the different things and people and stuff like that. And I'm here with a local neighborhood baby from the Stressed, Depressed, and Anxious podcast. We're going to call her D, too. So say hi.
Hello. I'm so excited to be on here.
Oh, thank you. Okay, so this week we're going to talk about depression and like your relationship with depression. I know that you talk about it a lot on your podcast. And so I kind of wanted to get, because I have depression too. So, you know, I think it's something common that, it's a lot more common than people would like to think. What do you think? Do you think it's more common or do you still find there's like a stigma?
I definitely think that there is still a stigma. And I also think that the use of the word too is like the term is just kind of misused. Right. So I think in the same way that a lot of mental health terms are misused, like, you know, I have anxiety. So like sometimes people say that they have anxiety, but it's not really clinical kind of anxiety that they have. It might just be anxiety that they have in general over a specific situation for a short amount of time until that situation resolves itself, right? Or people say that they're depressed, but really they're just sad, but they overuse the word depressed. Or like you are, maybe you just like things neat and you say like you're OCD. You know, it's very common, I think, in pop culture to use those words and kind of misuse them and overuse them, too. And I think that's why a lot of times where when you are actually clinically depressed or you have like, you know, a clinical form of anxiety, then people don't take it as seriously because they think that everybody has that and you can just kind of get over it because they're like, I've been depressed and I got over it. But really, it's like, have you been depressed or have you just been sad, you know, over a situation and you get over that? Because that's something that's, you know, easily or not easily, but that's something that can be, you know, managed. It's not a condition, you know? So that's what I really think overall in terms of like depression. I don't think it's as common as we think. I just think that people misuse those terms.
Oh yeah, I would agree with you. It also sort of takes away, not the power that it has, but the, the true meaning behind it. It like waters down the word when it's,
right,
you know, so overused. So how did you, I guess, figure out or discover that, like, you know, you were truly suffering from depression and not just, you know, like you said, just being sad or, you know,
Yeah, it took some time, right? It definitely took some time to figure that out, because when I was 17, I had a pretty, you know, terrible bout with depression. That was the first time that, you know, I believe that I was clinically depressed, or started to become clinically depressed. And I basically had gone through the year, basically all the symptoms that, you know, could ever be described of clinical depression, including, you know, not being interested in any activities that I used to be, you know, I couldn't feel anything. There was a numbness that went along with it. I felt like, you know, I was basically, for lack of a better term, the walking dead in a sense. Like, I felt like I was here, but I wasn't. I felt like I was in a room screaming and there was, you know, everybody's there, but they don't really hear you. And I just, you know, at that year I attempted suicide. It was, you know, pretty bad. But still, by the end of that year, I didn't have any kind of diagnosis. I didn't even think to go to a therapist or anything like that. You know, I just didn't grow up that way. So I wasn't diagnosed that year. But when I was in college, by that time, by the time I was actually like maybe a sophomore in college, I believe, was when I actually started to go to therapy, because there was a therapist available. And that was the first time that I was actually officially diagnosed with depression. And yeah, that's the first time I really figured it out. There was a term to it. You know, my symptoms hadn't changed from when I was 17, but, you know, at that age, I just didn't have, I wasn't officially diagnosed. So I definitely would say around 19, 20 years old.
Yeah. So I'm a really big advocate for therapy. I've been in therapy since I was like 14. It's one of those things that, you know, I grew up. Did you like it? Did you like find like help or solace in it? Or did you like hate it? Like, were you just like, no, it wasn't. They told me a bunch of stuff that, you know, I don't necessarily agree with. I don't think that's, you know, me or.
At first I did like it. I found some solace in it, right? Having that person that you could just talk to, but I didn't take it very seriously. I guess you could say I didn't think that it really helped me in any major way. And I think that was because, I don't know. I just think that like at first it was trial and error. And what I realized about therapy and with therapists is it later on down the line, I realized this is that just like anything else, like you have to have a certain chemistry with your therapist. It has to be the right one for you. There's obviously a lot of psychologists out there, a lot of different therapists you can go to. And it has to be somebody that you feel comfortable with, because ultimately, you know, if you don't feel comfortable, if you don't feel that you have a connection enough with that person, you won't be able to fully open yourself up to share those things that are going to lead to breakthroughs. So I think at first I liked it conceptually, like I liked the concept that I could go to someone and talk about something, but I didn't really feel truly connected to my therapist at first. But once I found one that I did feel connected to, I, you know, immediately started loving it. And like you said, I'm a big advocate of it as well. So yeah.
Yeah, no, I know that struggle too. I've been pretty lucky to have therapists that I really like. I found that more with the psychologist, the ones that prescribe medication. It's kind of the same relationship. The psychiatrist. I've gone through so many, because it's just, you know, first you have to figure out if they're on your insurance, or, you know, how all that's going to, or if they even take insurance or any of that. And then, you know, you have to go through, I've gone through so many just because I haven't, you know, clicked with them. So
can we talk about that for a second? Cause I think that's an interesting, you know, topic too. And I've had some struggles with this too. First off, I kind of just, you know, if you don't mind, I'd like to ask you, do you have like a gender preference in terms of, you know, going to a therapist?
Yes. female. I prefer female, like therapist, but I prefer male, like doctors that write me stuff, like prescriptions. So psychiatrists.
Can you speak a little bit about why?
Well, for female, like the therapy, I prefer females because I don't know, there's just something, like it makes it easier for me to talk to a female therapist and like, I don't know, it just, it's more comfortable. I don't feel quite as cagey, like opening up, to a female therapist, but with, male psychiatrists, I find I'm a very like straight shooter. I'm very, you know, like just don't beat around the bush. Just tell me like what you think's going to help me kind of a thing. And I found that men in the psychiatric capacity are a lot more straightforward. They're not going to like sugarcoat it for me. And if they're going to tell me like, hey, I really think you need this medicine because this is, you know, this is what most of my patients are on for depression or whatever, and it's really worked for them, or, you know, all the different stuff. I don't know if that's true. That's just been my experience.
Yeah. I mean, I'm glad I'm not the only one. I've had the similar experiences because I feel like, you know, like you said, and it's for the same exact reason. I've had the experience with, and I've had male, therapists before, psychologists before that I've gone to, and they what I found in my experience is that they are kind of more solution-based oriented, you know what I mean, like like just, and I think that's just like the male psyche, you know, majority of male psyche is just that, like, you know, when you tell them a problem, they want to find a solution. And I don't think that that really works with for me at all in terms of, you know, it's like going to therapist, I kind of need to just talk about what I'm going through. We can find a solution at some point, you know, we can find a breakthrough, but really what I'm looking for is a way to express myself. And I think a lot of times when I go into some of those first couple of sessions, or when I've gone into one of those first couple of sessions with a male therapist, it's been like, okay, you know, this is what I'm going through. It's like, okay, well, you should do this, you should do this, you should do this. And it just doesn't work for me. And I don't click with that. But with the women, I feel like they listen a lot more, you know, and they weren't trying to find solutions for me. And I think that that really helped me connect with them. And it just works better for me. And like you said, with the male psychiatrist, where they're prescribing medicine, I think you're absolutely right. That's been my experience. You know, for everybody, it's different. And, you know, that's been my experience, that they've been, you know, kind of more straight with me in terms of medication. But the thing I will say too, and I'll kind of, you know, preface what I was saying basically is I think with the kind of traumas that I've had too, I think I just trust women more too. And that also could be part of it's not just because of the style of the male psychologist. I think that it's also like, I just trust women more, and I trust women more to open up to, just in terms of like some of the traumas that I've had in my life. And I think that might be the case for, you know, other women who generally even just prefer a certain gendered doctor. That's a big thing that some people, I think, don't actually think about. So yeah.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, yeah, any kind of doctor or, you know, therapist, like I like just simply refuse to go to a male gynecologist. I won't. Right. It's just too weird. It's just not for me. Like, I get that, like, you can be one, but it's just weird. I can't get over that hump with that. So,
yeah, no, same. It takes a brave woman.
Yeah, it does. That's a lot of trust. And I guess I'm not there yet. Working on it though.
I mean, that's commendable. I don't even think I'm working on it.
Well, I can't say I'm like really working on it. I'm not like, we're trying that hard, you know? So like, okay. So once you initially, like, I guess you had said that it was your therapist that kind of first told you, like, I don't know how they worded it, you know, if they were like, hey, so have you ever thought that, like, maybe you just have depression? Like, I don't know if that's what was said or how that conversation went down, but, and you absolutely do not have to tell us. That's totally fine. But like, what was your feeling in that, like, sort of in that moment? Or like, was there relief? Were you like, oh my gosh, like, now there's a name for that thing that is wrong with me or whatever?
Well, I mean, I don't even think it was framed as a question. I think, you know, I was just told, like, you have clinical depression. But,
well, okay.
But I think I had, like, simultaneously two feelings. Like you mentioned, I did feel a sense of, like, okay, like, it's good to be informed. That's what I have. Like, there's a name for it. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not just making this up in my head, because I think it's probably symptomatic of, like, what I go through anyway with my anxiety and all this kind of stuff. I just, like, feel a lot of guilt and a lot of shame about a lot of things. So in my mind, it's like, I'm like, oh, like, before that session, I'm like, oh, you know, I feel like I'm depressed. But I'm like, I'm probably not depressed. I'm probably just feeling sorry for myself. And I just beat myself up about it, like, all the time. So, like, hearing that I actually had clinical depression was in some ways alleviating, just because, like, I knew that I wasn't making this up in my head, you know?
Yeah.
The other feeling was just absolute. I just felt like crap. You know, I felt like, wow, what a loser. Like, I have clinical depression. Like, geez, like. You know, I just felt bad about myself initially. I was just kind of like, you know, like, loser. That's just like my negative self-talk at the time, if we're being honest. Like, it was just kind of like, I felt like I was such a loser. I felt like, you know, I was so young and here I am. And it's not like, you know, my life is like the absolute worst. It could be a lot worse, and I'm just sitting here and I can't even enjoy it. Like, I just started to, like, it all just started to going in my head. Yep. Which again is probably symptomatic, but it was just, I was just like, oh, I hate myself, you know?
Yeah, well, that's the paradox that I find myself in when I'm, because I'm also bipolar, so mm-hmm. and I have anxiety as well, like, you know, really bad anxiety. So it's great when it all, because with bipolar, your highs are really, really high. Mm-hmm. And then your lows are, like, as low as you can possibly go. But that, when you're in that depression part of it, it's, you know, that's the paradox of it, is you know, I feel really bad because, you know, and now I'm depressed. Well, now I have depression. Well, then why am I like this? What's wrong with me that, like, I had to get this yeah. thing, you know? But it's just, you know, and then it's that circular logic that just, and then you're depressed because you're like,
depressed,
I can't,
because you're depressed.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and even mentioning that, like, you know, piggybacking off of what you were saying that you have, which is bipolar. I think, when I was, okay, so I was, like, probably around 15 or 16 years old. I just didn't want to go to school one day. And I, like, I don't know why, but I just didn't feel like going to school. And I told my mom, I was like, I'm not feeling good. My stomach hurts. Like, it's really painful, whatever. And my mom is a registered nurse. So she just ended up taking me to a doctor that day, to go see a doctor. And I remember, you know, the doctor was examining me and he was just saying, you know, like, give me, like, basic care. He basically was saying, like, yeah, I'm not, you know, she's fine. Yeah. But then, you know, my mom started talking to the doctor and was telling the doctor, like, about how moody I am. And I really was. I was, like, a moody, sort of, like, angsty teenager. And I've been moody most of my life. It's just, I think it's just my personality, you know?
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from, with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Mm-hmm. In that sense, I was just like very moody, and different things throw me off. So like I'm more of a person that like, you know, I could be happy, but then like if somebody says something that I was like easily offended and things like that, yes. Especially when I was younger. Yes. So
well, that I was always told, you know, it sort of reiterated. I was told in my, just by various and unsundry people. I take everything really personally. Like I take. Yeah. You know, like I don't know if it was necessarily I was offended. It was more like I just take everything super personally. So everything seemed like the end of the world, you know, or everything just seems like the great, you know, I don't know.
Yeah, I was told that a lot, too, when I was growing up. Right. So I went this doctor, as my mom's describing this, this doctor's like, well, maybe you should have her checked out. Maybe she's bipolar, you know, and I was just like, I felt like, what? Like, why would you say this? You know what I mean? Like, I just felt so like devastated almost that the doctor would say this. And I'm like thinking like, no, I'm not bipolar. And it made me think about it for so, you know, like probably the rest of the week. And what I realized again, even as a doctor, you know, I think like it wasn't wrong of him to say, you know, that she could have me examined to see. But I just felt like also, you know, these kind of things, these phrases sometimes are used so broadly because, yeah. You know, of being diagnosed and everything and having gone to therapists, like I'm not bipolar, but like a kid who is, or a teenager who's like moody and thinks everything is the end of the world is pretty common. And right. It's not,
Right. When you were saying that, I was thinking, well, show me a teenager that's not, you know.
Exactly. And I think that waters down, like you said, you know, when you are actually bipolar, you know, I have friends who are bipolar and I've seen people who have experienced this and how, you know, how high the highs are and how low the lows are and really what you're going through. I think it minimizes it when people are thinking that just because, you know, you have fluctuations in your mood that they might not understand. They're like immediate, like you're so bipolar. Like I've heard people say, like friends of mine all the time, like you're so bipolar, you know?
Yeah.
And I just think that's what, like we were talking about earlier, just really waters it down.
Oh yeah. Well, I mean, and you even see it, you know, in like film and TV, you see it, you know, where, you know, there's that, you know, very, very ancient joke where, you know, like the husband comes in and the wife's mad and he's like, oh, you're so bipolar today. And it, you know, that sort of waters it down because that, it, you know, it's like, it's a joke or like, well, that's just women or that's just, it's like when you're married, you know, or, and it's like that, but that's not even what that word means. Like you can't even be bipolar for a day. Like that's not
right. Exactly.
That's not how it works.
And then on top of that, even more so than just watering it down, right? It also makes it seem like a negative thing. When you say, you're so bipolar today, it's like, okay, I don't want to deal with this shit. You know, like this is a frustrating thing for me. This is an annoying thing for me. And so the person who's actually suffering with, you know, actually being bipolar, it also makes how, you know, it makes you feel bad, you know?
Yeah. Well, the only, I will have to say, I don't know if you've ever seen the show Homeland, but Homeland, I think it was on like Showtime or something.
Oh, yeah.
Or
I've
HBO.
Heard of it. I haven't watched it.
Well, the main character in that show, polar. And I would say that as far as like modern media go, that is the most accurate depiction of what having bipolar disorder is truly like, what it actually looks like. Because, well, and the other thing is too, you can have two, there are two different types. So if you're type, I believe it's if you're type one, then that means that you have like weeks where you're really high and then you have weeks where you're really low. Mm-hmm. But bipolar type two is what I have, which is, I believe it's type two. I could be getting these confused. But the other one is years. It can last for years. So the highs, you could be really high for like 18 months or 2 years. And then, but then your lows are your low. For 18 months to 2 years.
Yeah, so. That's what I mean. Even to hear that is like, whoa, and so heavy. And the thought that, you know, it gets so minimized, like, oh, you're so, I mean, it's just upsetting.
Well, yeah, and it does the, you know, they do that with depression too. There, or they, I feel like depression isn't as, like, as much of a joke as it is romanticized in, like media.
It's romanticized, and it's also like a negative thing, right? Because yeah. I think, like, I've kind of used this phrase a lot, and I call it toxic positivity.
Yes.
And I hate that, because it's like, those are the people, like, that they're kind of like trolls, you know. Those are the people that are just like, you know, just keep your chin up. Like, why don't you try to smile? Like, why don't you just, you know, like, take a deep breath, like, go for a walk outside and have some sunshine and you'll be fine. Like, they just really, like, don't even want, they'll ask you how you are, and, you know, but they really don't want to know. They just want to give you, like, these
kind of
solutions
toast
in their mind, just to, like, okay, yeah, just try to brighten up your day. And it's like, are you kidding me? If I could do that, do you not think that I would be doing?
Well, and then the other people, and I've struggled with this kind of idea, of, you know, the people that are like, well, just choose to be happy. You know, yeah, you see, I don't know if you've ever seen that picture, but it's like, there's a boy and he's in, like, a school bus or something. And on one side, it's like, you know, depression and, like, rainy. And it's like all the things that you would associate negatively, like you were saying, with, like, having a bad day or depression. And then on the other side, it's like sunny and, like, flowers and rainbows and all this stuff. And it's, and the caption is just, you know, like, you choose what kind of day you have or some nonsense. And it's like, yeah, sometimes, but sometimes it's not just I woke up on the wrong side of the bed. Sometimes it's I don't know if I have the energy to get out of bed, because going to the bathroom is going to use up all my energy. And then I'm just going to lay in bed for the next, you know, 12 hours.
Yeah, people really do not get that. They in some respects, I can kind of give them a little leeway to the fact that, like, it would be hard to understand unless you go through it. But also, like, it's not like they're seeking to understand either. They just kind of, you know, immediately go towards minimizing it and just making it into this thing that's, like, negative and, you know, whatever, should be shunned. And it is upsetting, because, like, you know, it's hard to explain. It's really hard to explain to people, especially the people who are toxically positive and think that, you know, you can just, you know, set it in your mind not to be depressed. It's a medical condition. It's like having a broken leg, and then you're just like, okay, I'm going to just get up and I'm going to set up in my mind that, you know, my leg is not broken, and I'm just going to walk, and I'm just going to take off these, you know, I'm not going to use the cast. I'm not going to use any of that. I'm just going to walk, and it's going to be fine because I believe it. And it's like, no, your leg is broken.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I mean, it's that, well, and it's that double-edged sword too, because yes, I have depression, and, you know, I struggle with this too, because it's just, or this idea that depression, no, I would not wish this on you. No, I don't wish that you had this so that you can go through it, so that you know exactly what it's like. So, but you also have to meet me halfway. Like, I can describe stuff to you and explain here kind of just very, you know, metaphorically how it feels and what I'm feeling right now when I'm in this depression. But you also have to, like, do your part too. You got to, like, do some reading or, like, watch a TED talk or I don't, you know, there's stuff to do, you know, to understand this.
I mean, absolutely. And again, it's something that people do just without being asked about medical conditions. You can say that you have a heart condition. You can say that you have, you know, a lung condition or whatever it is. And people will, without, you know, you asking or prompting, like, oh, I've never heard of that. And they'll Google it and be like, wow, okay, this is this or whatever. And you'll automatically be educated. But when it comes to things like depression or mental health in general, they just kind of go off of what they see in the media, or they'll ask you and then they don't really understand it. And it's like, okay, well, then you're not doing any work to try to educate yourself either. You know, and I think that that's a big deal. And a lot of mental health advocates say the same thing, like, you know, these things need to be treated as the same way that, you know, any kind of illness is treated, because it is an illness and it is, you know, affecting your life. And I think that's a lot of the times too, like, where you know, when you when you go online and you look at mental health and things like that, or even taking some of those little quizzes to kind of try to, you know, see if you have a condition. One of the questions that always come up, or they tell you to ask yourself, is like, is it affecting your day to day? You know, is it affecting how, if you're able to live your life normally? And that's the big difference too. In a lot of these things, it's like, you know, you might be feeling sad, but not getting in the way of you actually being able to get up and go to work.
Right.
And a lot of these conditions, like, they are debilitating. Like, they're seriously debilitating. I think that's what's part of clinical depression too, is it can be completely debilitating.
Oh yeah. Well, I mean, my grandfather, it's hereditary in my family, on both sides. So I got really lucky with that. Depression, anxiety, and bipolar, all three are hereditary on both sides in my family. And my mom used to tell me stories, you know, to help just try to explain it to me, like what you're like, yeah, you're probably have depression, kind of, you know, that kind of thing. Her grandfather used to have such debilitating, and this was, you know, back in when her grandfather, you know, began to realize what he had, you know, this was in like the 30s. So there was nothing. They didn't have the ability to like you truly were just like that sad old guy, you know, down the street. But my grandmother would tell stories about to my mom that, you know, there were weeks when he couldn't get out of bed because he was, you know, he was fine physically, but he was so depressed that there were weeks where he just couldn't get out of bed because it was just, it's too much work to just get out of bed and like put pants on.
And that's seriously, you know, so sad to think about those people that, you know, they didn't have the words. They didn't even have the opportunity to have the word for like how they were feeling. People just generally classified it as sad. Do you think that still like is part of the residual effect of like people still classifying it that same way, especially older people too? What do you think?
Yeah, I would say. Cause yeah, like I said, that was, you know, that was in the '30s and he lived until like 1975. So, I mean, that's only two generations. And even my grandmother, my mom's parents, there's still that element kind of to it of, you know, like, yeah, you have depression, but just almost that like pull yourself up by your bootstraps kind of thinking, kind of, you know, but it's, you know, that's only one generation ago, so, or two generations ago, but you know what I'm saying? Like, it's, yeah, it's not that old. And it's like, you know, we're just now at a point where people in society are like, oh, this could be like a thing. Like, it could be like really big, like a thing for some people.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. And I think that's why it took me so long to realize what it had too. And also why I felt so bad about it was because, you know, you grow up and these things seem almost foreign, completely foreign. Like I felt like nobody else in my family had depression or anxiety. And I felt like I was the crazy one, you know, the weird one that like needs therapy. Like that was really tough to deal with.
Yep, I feel that. Absolutely. I feel like that's how a lot of people feel.
Yeah, and it's crazy. It's you know, it ended up, I was like the first one in my family that was diagnosed with generalized anxiety disorder. And this was around the time when I was like my early 20s. I was probably like 22 I was diagnosed with that. Huh?
Oh, okay. No, I could hear you. It went out for a second.
Oh, okay. Can you hear me now?
Yeah, sorry.
No, it's fine. So when I was about 22, that was when I was, you know, diagnosed with generalized anxiety disorder. And then, I was pretty much the first one in my family. And I did feel like such like the the crazy one or whatever. And then my sister, after, or during college, for her, she's like 5 years younger than me. So by the time it was like, you know, when she was in college herself, she ended up getting diagnosed with anxiety and depression as well. And my mom actually also got, you know, diagnosed with anxiety later on.
So there's like a ripple effect, kind of.
Yeah. Yeah, cool. Absolutely. And they started to, like, my mom especially, you know, because she used to always, like, she used to pick me up from, you know, my therapist, and she used to always be like, well, do you really feel like you need therapy? Like, she kind of shamed me about it a little bit. And it's like, yeah. I don't really place full blame on her about it, because I just felt like her views on it were just kind of like, you know, like, she just didn't think that it was something that, like, you know, I should need. And, like, she wasn't educated about it enough. Yeah. And she was kind of operating off of, like, the stigma about it, too. And she later learned, you know, that this is something that can happen to anybody, and that it's not something shameful, and it's something that you can get help for, just your medical condition. And my sister, you know, she learned the same thing. So it's interesting, because sometimes I think that, like, people think that it's not in their family.
Oh, yeah.
But I think it's actually, like, they just didn't have a name for it.
Yeah, definitely. I don't know when the DSM came out and when it became part of the DSM, but it just, I do also think that they're maybe not, like my parents are in their, like, early 50s. I don't know how old your parents are, but go ahead.
Oh no, sorry, my parents are in their 60s.
Okay, yeah, so kind of in, it's only like a decade in between. But I still kind of feel like they're, even that recently, there's still that kind of stigma of, like, yeah, well, those are the only, like, the problem children need therapy, or, like, need, you know, have, you know, some weird thing wrong with them, like, and that's how it's also framed, is it's something wrong with you.
Yeah, something wrong. And honestly, that's how I thought about it, even me having it. So there was this one time where I was at work. And this was, like, becoming, like, a serious problem. Like, I was having so much anxiety. And at that point, like, I had already been diagnosed with anxiety. But, like, I was having so much anxiety, like, so many anxiety attacks. And I was at work, and I couldn't, like, you know, stay there and work, because I would have, like, anxiety attacks. And I would, like, need to go outside. Like, I just couldn't breathe. And I felt like my heart was going to be out of my chest, because for people who don't know, like, an anxiety attack or a panic attack can sometimes feel like this mimic exactly the symptoms of a heart attack. Mm-hmm. So if you feel that pressure on your chest, you feel like you can't breathe at all, you have shortness of breath, you literally, like, it's the same exact symptoms of having a heart attack, except you happen to not be having a heart attack. You happen to just be having an anxiety attack. Yeah. And so it's really scary and really hard to deal with. And a lot of times online, when you look up how to deal with it, you know, they tell you to kind of just do breathing exercises and all these things. But, like, to be honest, in those moments, it is extremely, it's like, okay, like, I mean, if you were having a heart attack and trying to do, just imagine, like, if you were having a heart attack and you're trying to do breathing exercises.
Right. Like, meditate, do deep breathing. Yeah. Right. I've had a panic attack and then, like, looked, because I, like, saved it in my phone to, like, remind me, you know? Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I pulled up, and it was like, remember to breathe. And I was like, it's kind of hard to remember to breathe when you can't breathe.
Yeah. You know, like, your body is just now, like, you know, I feel like it's kind of attacking you in a way. It's just
You know? Well, and I also, like, shake really bad and, like, feel really weak. And sometimes I have to, like, sit down or grab onto something, you know, or just because it can get, and I've had it so bad where like my vision is blurred, you know, like it can get serious, guys.
It can get extremely serious. It literally feels like, and that's how I feel. A lot of times when I'm having anxiety attack or a panic attack, I feel like I'm going to die. Like, I feel like I'm having dire symptoms that, you know, if you look it up, it's like, go to the emergency room, call 911. Mm-hmm. Like, either it can either be an anxiety attack or you're about to die, basically. Like, one or the other, 50-50 chance. Mm-hmm. And I keep having to try to reassure myself that, no, you know you have anxiety. Like, you,
right.
You have, but it doesn't really help, to be honest. Like, it's like, I know, but like, I also can't breathe, you know?
Right.
But I did, at that, you know, that point, I just like couldn't stay at work. Like, I literally felt like I was going to die. So I said, okay, you know what? Fine. Who cares? I'm not going to go to the emergency room, but I will go to the urgent care. And just like, just in case I'm having symptoms, like there's a serious medical thing going on, like, at least I'll know. And I just need to do this. Like, I can't breathe. So like, I went to the urgent care that was like nearby, and you know, they went through the whole rigmarole, and they're like, no, you just have, you know, an anxiety attack, or you're just having a panic attack. And I was like, okay. And the doctor there, he said like the worst thing that I think any medical professional has ever said to me. And he was like, you know, this is just who you are, you know, like you, this anxiety, like this thing, like, this is just who you are, you know. He meant it in a good way, you know. I think he was trying to be comforting, but he was like, yeah. No, there's nothing wrong with you. This is just who you are. And I was so devastated by that. And I probably will never forget it. I hope I do, but I probably will never forget it. But he just looked at me and was like, this is who you are. And I was just like, no, like, this is the worst. This is
then
I
suck.
Yeah, I suck. Myself, are you kidding me? Like, I don't know. I don't think I was born like this. This is awful. Like, I don't want to be this person. Are you kidding?
Right.
And it was terrible. That was like, I can't believe that. You know, it's the worst.
Oh, yeah. Well, and that... One of the best things that I was ever told by a therapist was, you know, when you're clearly not okay and someone asks, are you okay? It's like, do you not have eyes? But it's the same thing that happens when, you know, you're having a panic attack and people are just like, well, just be calm, like, just calm down. Everything's fine. It kind of feels like that's sort of what he said to you, I guess. Yeah. That, you know, it's kind of that, like, just calm down. Like, it's all fine. You know, yeah. Just like, it's you. Just, what are you doing?
Yeah. Like, are you kidding me? So who I am is a person who literally cannot breathe.
Right. Awesome. Thanks, Doug.
Yes, that I should be able to do. Like, that's not, no, that's not cool.
Yeah, I can't function. Do you understand that? Like, yeah. I work from home specifically because I guess for about a year, it's been okay. But the year before last, so 2018, I was having panic attacks so bad that I had to quit my job too, because I was like, I'm just going to work from home. Because it's just out of control. Like, it can destroy, like, anxiety and depression alone, you know, just separately in themselves, can destroy your life. Like, it physically was not possible for me to go to work.
It can. I mean, it has. I mean, I've had that experience. I literally had a great job. You know, I was making great money and I had all the opportunities in the world. And that was actually the time that I'd gotten my first apartment. So my brand new apartment, so exciting. And I was moved out on my own and everything was, you know, cool. And, you know, then I fell into, you know, a depression, and it was so terrible that I literally could not get out of bed. Like, I could not get out of bed. I was having so many suicidal thoughts. Like, I just, you know, I stopped going to work. So it was basically job abandonment because I just stopped going to work, and everything just kept piling up. Like, my mailbox was like somebody who hadn't been home in like months. Mm-hmm. Like, it was just terrible. I would just, like, my mom would call and be like, no, I'm fine. And I wasn't fine. you know?
Right.
And it got to the point where I actually got evicted from my apartment because, like, I literally wasn't going to work. I wasn't paying anything. I wasn't doing anything. And, you know, I had to deal with that afterwards because obviously you end up having to pay back that debt. And, like, you know, having that on your record isn't great and stuff like that. So my credit took a hit, and I had to go through the financial things of, like, paying all that money back and getting my credit back up. But it's still, like, that is, like, life ruining. And imagine, I think that's how people become homeless. I think that's how people, you know, in some situations, like, maybe lose everything. Like, it could literally take everything away from you because you cannot function. Like, you cannot function at all. And people don't get that, you know, they don't get that part of it. They think, like, okay, like, why don't you just get up? Like, about it now, where I'm feeling better than I was then, you know, I wish I could have just gotten up. Are you kidding me? Like, I wish I could have just gotten up and went to work and did everything I was supposed to do, but I literally could not. And you're right. It absolutely can ruin your life completely.
I mean, well, and it's really interesting that you say that, because that was sort of the most recent, I guess, experience with my depression too, was, and the thing is that, like, you know, it's like you said, I had the same experience. It was my first apartment alone by myself, did all this stuff, had a really good job, benefits, all the stuff. And then it hits you. And it's one of those things where it's like, yeah, all this stuff was going right. And I would do this to myself, and I know I shouldn't do it to myself, and nobody else should. You guys, nobody else should either. Yeah. The whole everything is going right. Everything should be, like, on the outside, everything looks awesome.
Yeah.
Why am I so sad? What is, you know, and then it can turn into the, what is wrong with me? Why am I like this? And it's just, and then it just goes bad from there.
Yeah, that's exactly how it is. The vicious, vicious cycle. I remember even before that happened, I remember being at work and just, like, I knew, because at that point, like, I had already been to therapy before. I knew the signs. Like, I knew things were getting bad. Like, I was literally, you know, just starting. I felt like, okay, it's just, like, every day I felt more and more depressed. I'm like, things are getting bad again. I remember having that thought, like, things are getting really bad again. And I tried, by the way, because I had moved to a new state. So I tried to get an appointment. I was like, I need to talk to somebody. I tried to get an appointment, but these things are not easy, right? Because my job, you know, I worked in an office, and I worked from, like, you know, 8 to 6 or something, 6 p.m. Okay, right. First of all, that kind of nixes a lot of these therapists, which I feel like that's a change, even to a doctor too, because, like, obviously people are working. And if you look at the American model, like, 9 to 5, I mean, 5 o'clock, why do you have to take a day off to do these things? But, like, anyway, a lot of these therapists were closed. The ones that were open were, like, more expensive. They weren't part of my insurance or whatever. And then even when I got tried to get someone on the phone that, like, okay, fine, you're open after 6, it can come to you. And then also you're on my insurance. It was a thing like, okay, but then you could see me next month. You know?
I was going to say, then there's the whole thing of, I've called people and they're like, yeah, we don't have anything for 6 months. And you're like, but I need you now, like, right now.
Like, a big deal. And there's no emergency room for mental health. There's none. No. You have to literally go to the emergency room, and it's not, it's not going to do anything for you, because it's not a medical, like, it's not about your body. It's about your mind. So, like, there's no emergency room for that. And it was just, that was what I ran into, and then just kept getting bad, because, like, I couldn't get an appointment. I couldn't talk to anybody. I couldn't do anything. I wasn't, you know, able to get my medications on. And then it just spiraled downwards from there. So, you know, access and all that kind of stuff matters. And I was in a more fortunate position than most people, right? Because not everybody even has those benefits to be able to even have it on their insurance in the first place.
Yeah.
You know? So, like, it's just,
that doesn't even bring into the account, you know, that you, if you even have insurance. If you don't, it's like, oh my goodness.
Again, there's no emergency room for it, right? So you can't, there's, you know, with your body, it's like, okay, if you're literally gonna die, like, you can go to the emergency room, and it doesn't matter if you don't have insurance. But, like, what about your mental health? Like, your mental health can kill you. you know, that's part of why people commit suicide. But there's no room for that. You know, there's no like, okay, like this is not, things are not going okay. Like, I don't feel okay. I can't breathe. I can't talk to anyone. I can't, you know, do anything. There's nothing that they're going to do for you. They're going to refer you, you know.
I was going to say, you know, I've been to the emergency room on several occasions for like a panic, for panic attacks and stuff. And yeah, they'll prescribe you something right there, or they'll give you something right there. Mm-hmm. And then they've, you know, again, put the Band-Aid over it for, you know, maybe 12 to 24 hours. But then they're going to refer you to somebody. God only knows if they're on your insurance. And if they are, you know, when, how soon can they get you in? You know, they're not going to write you a long-term prescription in the emergency room for, you know, medication for this stuff.
Yeah. And I know some people might think like, well, you know, you have mental health hospitals, right? Like you can, you know, check yourself into those, you know, without even thinking about the insurance and all these things, that whole system, in my experience with that whole system as well, is really like, it needs to be revitalized. It is so messed up. I feel like, you know, what they do and how they classify, you know, people that should be in there. I mean, I've literally seen, and this is, and she is bipolar. And this is recent. This was a couple months ago. With like, I had a friend who was just, she was like just moving into an apartment. She just had like two roommates or whatever. And she was going to move, like two roommates had already moved into the apartment and she was going to move in like a week later.
And okay.
One of the roommates was like, okay, like their third roommate, she was saying like, was acting strange. She was acting weird and was like breaking stuff in the house. And it was like, just unresponsive and doing weird things. And like, she didn't know what was going on and all this stuff. And like my friend was like, oh my gosh, like I heard that she broke, you know, the other roommate's things. And like, I don't know what's going on. And she's trashing the apartment. Like I need to go over there. You want to come with me? And I'm like, sure, I'll come with you. So we go over there, like thinking like this girl is like, who does she think she is? Like what's going on? We didn't know that she was bipolar at the time. And we go there and like, yeah, everything's all over the place. The apartment is a mess, like whatever. And you know, she goes to her room and she's like, no, what's wrong with you? What's going on? And she's like completely unresponsive and everything. And immediately I was like, well, it looks like there's, you know, she has a mental issue. Like there's something up there, because like a normal person wouldn't be doing that kind of stuff. And as, you know, it went along, like I said, you know, we have to call her parents. You have her parents' phone number. Like we should call someone. Like she doesn't seem like she's okay. So we ended up getting in contact with her father, who then said, okay, yeah, she's been diagnosed. She, you know, she's bipolar, you know, and we thought like, even when she was getting this apartment, like we thought that, you know, she is maybe having a manic episode, but we really couldn't do anything. Can you hold off? Like we'll come, you know, and get her, but can you kind of hold off for the weekend? And, you know, the other girl was just like, no, we cannot hold off for the weekend, because like, you don't understand. She's like lighting candles. Like she's doing weird things. Like she's like, she could potentially put me in a dangerous situation.
Right.
Also is trashing the apartment. So like, you know, that's also.
Well,
like,
there goes that deposit, you know.
Yeah. So they're like, no, we can't wait. And finally the dad was like, you know, we felt really bad, because the dad was like, well, you know, we'll have to like have her committed. And, you know, he was sad to do it. So anyway, she did call and the cops showed up and they literally questioned her. Like they, you know, they came in, they questioned her. They weren't very nice at all, first of all. No. And I don't know why they sent police to deal with this, because clearly they don't know how to deal with it.
They're not trained. Yeah, that's a whole other thing.
So it's like, why? And they were like, by the end of that whole interview, she was clearly not okay. She wasn't even wearing a shirt when they came in. Like, you know, no shirt, no bra, nothing. We were trying to get it put on. She wouldn't even put it on. But they talked to her for a little bit. They weren't very nice. And then they were like, we're not taking her.
Oh, yeah.
And good. We're like, good. Are you kidding me? Like,
good.
What qualifies? You know, like, does she have to, like, have slit her wrist or something? Like, what? what is going on? And they're like, no. And the dad had to, like, was arguing with them, was like, you know, you've taken her before, like, this is not okay, like, she's clearly not okay. And after a long argument back and forth, they're finally like, okay, fine, we'll take her, begrudgingly. And they put her in cuffs, you know, and they weren't very nice at all, like I said. And, you know, within 24 hours,
her go. Also, she's in handcuffs. Like, she's not really, she's not hurt anybody.
Right.
And the point is, like, she's done nothing wrong, really, yeah. You know, at least nothing that can't be, you know, fixed with, you know, I would assume, like, soap and water and, you know.
Right.
But...
No, and like, it was totally wrong. I, you know, it made me so sad. It made all of us so sad. My friends were like crying and stuff. And like, it was just devastating and traumatizing to see something like that. And we felt so horrible, you know, for her and about the whole situation. And, you know, in within like 24 hours, like I said, they let her go. She really didn't, like you said, they kind of put a band-aid over it, but she really didn't get the help that she needed. Within another 2 weeks, she was back in. Like, it's just like, that whole system is just not good, not good. And, you know, it stays on your record, first of all, which I feel like is a weird thing. It's like, you, it's not like you went to jail, but people use that kind of stuff against you. And on top of that, like, I also feel like when you're in there, you know, it's one of two things. It's either sometimes people that need to be in there for longer are not, like, they release them. And sometimes
people, oh, yeah.
Who should be let go, they keep them in there, especially in terms of like what kind of insurance you have. They kind of bleed you dry, you know, and they have the authority to keep you in there for much longer than you probably need to be kept in there. So it's just really like a messed up system. And that's why a lot of people are very reluctant. And you hear all those stories about like people being abused there. I mean, it's not good.
Well, and this is happening like now. Like, I mean, if you've ever read One Flew's Over the Cuckoo's Nest, that's a pretty horrific depiction of what it's like to be in a mental institution. Mm-hmm. As someone who has both been in, you know, several, and also, you know, just have read, that's a pretty horrific depiction of it. And it's definitely gotten better than, you know, the turn of the century, what we did to those poor people. Mm-hmm. But yeah, guys, it hasn't exactly improved astronomically, I would say.
No, not at all. I've been to one once. It was a very interesting experience because I basically ended up there because I was so like, I got to a point where, first of all, I was very depressed. I was also like, you know, pretty much at that point having suicidal ideation a lot. Mm-hmm. And then also I was getting no sleep at all. Like I hadn't slept for like maybe like.
Yeah, that's sort of a weird symptom and interesting that I've sort of found in my depression, too, is where like, you know, I have I can't sleep, but I also have no energy. You know, then you're laying there or just sitting on the couch if you've managed to, you know, drag yourself to the couch. Then you're just, you know, you've got no energy, but your mind is just going a million miles an hour and you can't, you know, you can't. It's just a weird, it's like, why does my body do this?
Yeah, why? You know, why? And then I ended up there, you know, first of all, I got the cuffs put up. Like I went to a therapist, first of all. I was referred, like emergency, whatever, went to a therapist. And then she was just like, yeah, you need to do this. It'll make you, like, she basically talked me into it. She was like, it'll, you know, you need this right now. Like, you'll feel better, blah, blah, blah. And then, you know, a cop shows up and they take you, like, they put me in the handcuffs. I felt like I was like not even in my own body at that point. Like I just felt like this can't actually be happening. And then I was there. It was horrible. It was a horrible experience. Like I literally waited maybe like, I want to say somewhere around 18 hours before they fully processed me to like get me up to where like I was supposed to be in terms of like being in a room and actually just like even settling in. And by that time I was just like, so like, I was just like, I want to leave. Like I was just like literally crying. I was so like, you know, and then finally when I was there, like, it wasn't actually bad, when I was there. Like, I remember just being there. They take your phone, whatever. I was in a room by myself. And, you know, they just kept giving me, they're like, what kind of soda do you want? And I was like, ginger ale. And they just, I had a cup and they would just keep giving me ginger ale.
I love ginger ale.
Yeah, same. It's my favorite. And then they're like, you know, like trying to get you to eat. So they're like, okay, what kind of food do you want? Whatever. And I just remember, like, at first it was good because for some reason I was, they you know, they gave me my medication and I was able to sleep. And so that made me feel a lot better.
Yeah.
So I was able to sleep and stuff. And so, like, day one was good. Day two, I was, you know, again, like, it was fine. Like, I just felt like I was getting more rest. I slept mostly the whole day. And then day three, like, because they gave me the option to, like, join group, like, they had group therapy sessions and they, like, gave you the option. But then what
For those of you that don't know what group is, it's exactly what it sounds like. It's a group of people come together and you usually either, like, play a game or it'll be, you know, some sort of talk. They'll bring some professional in to talk to you about something, or there'll be like some kind of activity. So that's group, you know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so they gave me the option to go or not go. And I most of, like, the first couple of days, I remember I declined and I just, like, slept, you know, through the whole day or whatever. Mm-hmm. And only woke up for meals because they'd come by your room and, like, they'd, you know, wake up. But then one of the things I started to notice when I started to go to some of my meals was, like, you know, a lot of the complaints from, like, people, they're like, oh my God, I've been here for weeks. I just want to go home, blah, 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 whatever. And I was just like, that just got me thinking, like, you know. And then I ended up, like, I think that they were saying, like, okay, like, there's a doctor that's going to be coming by, you know, to talk to people, evaluate, whatever.
Oh, yeah.
Go ahead.
No, I just, I remember that stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. So, like, I was just like, okay. And at that point, it had been like a week or something like that. And I was just like, I think I'm ready to go. I think I'm ready to get out of here. And when I heard that there was going to be a doctor coming by to talk and evaluate, I was like, well, maybe I should start going to these group therapy sessions. So it seems like, you know, that I'm participating.
Oh, yeah. That's the other thing. Sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off again. No, but that's the other thing. When you're in there, they tell you, you can either check yourself in, which is voluntary, or or you're committed, which would be involuntary. But, you know, they tell you, yeah, you can leave anytime. But it's different because that's not necessarily true. In order for you to leave, some places it has one, other places I've heard two, like there are several people that have to, like, sign off that say, mm-hmm. like, yeah, you can leave. You can't just be like, hey, get me out of here. Like a hospital where you can just leave against medical advice. No. Like, there are other people that are in it. So you can't just, it's not what they make it sound like. You can leave anytime. No, you can't. Yeah, no,
you cannot. And that door is locked. Okay. So I was there and I realized this, you know, after about a week of being there and I was feeling better. I realized, I was like, no way. Like, I do not want to be stuck in here. And when they said that there was going to be a doctor coming by to evaluate and stuff like that, I was like, okay, let me just start acting, you know, like I'm going to participate, whatever. So I started going to these group sessions, not with the idea of, like, actually utilizing anything that they were saying. And by the way, I also feel like, too, another thing that, you know, they should probably consider is that I think that, you know, and I don't know how to frame this so I don't sound like a complete asshole, but, like, where I was and, you know, I felt like, okay, like, I clearly wasn't okay. I was, you know, not getting any sleep. Like I said, I was having suicidal ideation. I was very depressed. But at the same time, like, after, you know, taking some medication while I was there and, like, actually getting some sleep, I was starting to feel better. But the people that were also in there with me were people with, like, it's like a wide range of different kinds of people that are mm-hmm. in there. Some people are very extreme cases, and they need serious, serious help. And some people are just more, I guess, what you would call a milder case, mm-hmm. but the range is very broad. So, like,
yeah.
Even participating in, or, you know, kind of fake participating in group sessions, I really didn't feel like I could relate to the majority of the people that were there because I felt like, you know, I don't know how to really explain it, but I just felt like, you know, these people seem to need like a lot of help. Like, screaming.
Oh,
just like, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Well, it's not necessarily like, okay, so they don't group everybody together. So like it's literally just sort of a melting pot of everybody. So that means people who are schizophrenic. That means people who, it's not just people who, you know, are, they don't have like a wing for the depressed people, a wing for the anxious people, a wing for the, you know, bipolar people. Like, no. It's everybody. It's right. So you could be some places will have you room, like some you had a single room, but some places, you know, there are two people. But yeah, you could theoretically or be sitting in a group with someone who has depression, someone who has anxiety, somebody who has OCD, someone who has schizophrenia, someone who's schizoaffective, someone who is, you know, bipolar. So, like, and it's just so there's no sort of, it's just like, yeah, you all belong together.
Right. Exactly. So that made me, you know, I just didn't feel connected to anything that was going on there. And then, so, you know, I participated, whatever, fake participated. And then once the doctor arrived, the one that was doing evaluations, they, you know, they called people one by one. So when I was in there, I was like, okay, my mission is to get the fuck out of here. I need the people to sign off, you know, so I can leave here. And I did voluntarily, you know, go in because my therapist, and like, I could have you commit. It was like a strong suggestion. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Committed, I've had those conversations.
Yeah. So I went to, you know, see the doctor, and I had the conversation. I was like, you know what? I'm feeling so much better now. I didn't sleep for a week. I feel like that was really messing with me. I think that, you know, I spoke, you know, as eloquently mm-hmm. as yeah, I think that was really, you know, it had a huge effect on me, obviously not getting any sleep. You know, I've been working a lot and just like, you know, stressed out about work. So I think that that was just it. And I think the medication I received and the care that I received, like really, really helped me. And I think, you know, staying beyond this point probably would be to my detriment because obviously financially it's not good. Like so I just like really framed it like, okay, like I'm feeling so much better now. It wasn't, you know, that serious and I should leave. And it wasn't necessarily because like I didn't need the care. It was just that like I started to get anxiety about the fact that like I was gonna be stuck in there. And especially because it's not funny. I guess I just have a dark sense of humor.
But, oh like, yeah. Well you've gotta laugh at some stuff. You gotta laugh because yeah, you can't cry.
There was this woman there that she just like kept yelling about how like take let me out every hour she'd be like let me out and she'd like run to the door. I remember there was like this hall where the door's at the end where it's definitely like locked and everything, you can't get out, and she'd like go to the door and keep trying to push it like let me out of here.
It's not funny, and mainly the only reason it's not funny is because you're terrified that's gonna be you in a week, like yeah. That's the only reason it's not like you're just like so terrified that's gonna be you in like a week, because you're like I will be that person in a week if I have to stay here for this much longer.
Seriously, like I was like, they take away your phone, like you can't even, I mean it's just like crazy. And like
and they won't let you check that phone. I mean you have to have like a very like just, it better be a really good reason for them to even let you touch that phone, otherwise it's not happening.
Yeah, it's not, it's definitely not happening. And like so I was just like no, like I, and it wasn't even just that woman who was like, you know, she was kind of like the most hysterical, but like there was other people, like I would be having, you know, I'd be having like my lunch or something, and there was this guy, I remember he was talking, he's like yeah, like you know I have a hearing like coming up, and like you know, I've been here for months now and I really want to leave and stuff like that. And just hearing those conversations or even those whatever, like I was just like, oh my God, like I cannot stay here. Like I have to get out of here.
So, right. Like, I can't do it.
Focused on, I was like, I have to get out of here. And I feel like I've seen this in movies and stuff like that too, where mental patients try to escape and like they make like the whole thing about it. But like there's a reason behind that. You know what I mean? Like, there is a reason behind that, okay? Like, these people can keep you against your will, for
exactly.
sure.
Exactly, yeah. And they can, and oh, by the way, if you're like, yeah, I want to leave, like, they can be like, no. Mm-hmm. Like you can do all of this stuff that you're saying. Mm-hmm. And for whatever reason, I don't know, the doctor, and by the way, like I said, it's multiple people. So like there's a psychiatrist, a therapist, like mm-hmm. a group meeting person, like there are a bunch of people that have to sign off. And if even one of them is like, no, then they're basically like, no, you have to stay. Sorry. So you have to convince a whole bunch, like a team of people to let you leave.
Yeah. Yep. It is. It's not cool. It is not cool. And you actually, and by the way, like at the time too, I didn't have a car. So I was like, okay, well, I am going to take a cab, like, or whatever, something like that. And they're like, no, you have to have somebody come and pick you up. Like there's no other way.
Yeah.
And I was just like, oh my God, like, you know, now what am I gonna do? And
right.
So call somebody to pick me up. Thankfully, it's just like a hospital, so it's like, okay, like I need to be picked up. Like, you know, I'm at the hospital, because you don't necessarily want people in your life to know that you were there. Even I didn't at the time, or whatever. Mm-hmm. So I was just like, you know, I was like, okay, well, you know, can you come pick me up? I was at the hospital for a little bit. And my friend was like, of course. What do you mean? Like, what's wrong? Whatever. So like, they came and picked me up. But thank God for that. Like, imagine, like, if you didn't have somebody to pick you up, like, that's just another reason where they could just be like, sorry, you have to stay. And I was like, oh my God.
Yeah.
And then I was out that door. Like, I walked out that door. Like, I was like, okay, I can't walk too fast because then they might think something. Like, I was literally so anxious to, like, get out of there. Mm-hmm. And, like, when I finally got out of there, it's like, oh my God, I felt like I escaped prison. I was like, oh my God. And I kept thinking about that one lady who was, like, unfortunately stuck in there, you know, because I remember I was leaving and she was like, are they letting you out? We're here. You know, like, it was just like,
yeah.
It sounds so crazy talking about that, but it's just like these experiences that you have.
Yeah. No. And again, you're like, it's not funny, but it actually, no, it is.
It is funny. It's funny and it's not. Like, it's a serious thing. So
yeah.
You can find me on Twitter at SD_anxious. And then you can find me on any podcast platforms that you use. So that could be Spotify, Anchor, Apple, whatever it is. You can just go on Twitter and find me on any of those platforms.
So that was the end of part one with local neighborhood baby. Or D from the Stressed, Depressed, and Anxious podcast. You guys can find me at MP Weirdo Podcast. That's our Twitter handle. And then you can find us on, you know, any place that you get your podcasts, iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, all the places. And then email me. If you have any questions or you want to talk more about something or you want to hear more about something, if you have a relationship that you want to talk about, just let me know at manicpixieweirdo@protonmail.com. That's the email. So check that out. And yeah, stay tuned for part two.